This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Glenn Schoonover. He is the Senior Director for Security Solutions at a company called CoolSpan. That's K-O-O-L-S-P-N, CoolSpan. Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Good morning, John. I'm well. Thank you.
You know, I think most of my listeners take the train into work, they take the bus into work, they see all these people with mobile devices. Mobile devices are everywhere you look. You know, last year, 2012, 700 million smartphones were sold. I mean, that's just a stunning figure. I thought it might behoove our audience to bring someone in who knows maybe a little bit about mobile security to give my listeners maybe an option or a choice or a selection they didn't know have as far as managing security for mobile devices. And so that's why we have Glenn in the studio today. But before we begin, maybe you can give some credibility to your background and your company with your experience and tell our audience what your background is, please, Glenn.
John, I'm a 1986 graduate of the United States Military Academy. I served in a variety of command and staff positions and finally ended up at the Pentagon as the Chief of Network Security.
The first one.
The first Chief of Network Security at the Pentagon, and I wasn't even supposed to go into that role. Originally, I was going to be assigned to manage some large legacy mainframe, and at the last minute, they said, no, we're standing up this new office, and you're going to be the Chief of Network Security, whatever that is, and as they say, the rest is history.
Yeah, many listeners, I think, are very empathetic with that because dynamic situations is, well, you're from Ohio, you're in charge of the Midwest.
Exactly.
Who knows why. So you got experience with large organizations and small organizations, everything in between. Is that right, Glenn?
Yeah, I do. There were 23,000 end users at the Pentagon. And, you know, as after I got out of the Army, then I went to work for a startup back in 2000, and it was 30 employees. So, from one end of the spectrum to the other.
And then you made a transition to a big dog, Microsoft. Is that right?
I did. And that was really exciting. It was a great time to get into Microsoft. I was a security advisor. They had just started making their trustworthy computing initiative a core part of the way they develop software. And they hired me and several other subject matter experts to work in public sector, to work with the federal customers, to help them build secure solutions based on the Microsoft technology.
And I think that's, we're on radio, so I can say, that's the phrase that pays. Trust. Trust is the phrase that pays. And I think that's what my listeners are interested in, is that using a mobile device to call your cousin or to text your friend or something is one thing, but using a mobile device in a military environment, now that's a horse of a different color, as they said in that movie from 1939. A whole different idea here. And that's what I want to talk about today is your company CoolSpan and how long you've been there and what CoolSpan does and how can CoolSpan help my listeners? I mean, that's the direct blunt question. What's in it for my listeners?
Well, CoolSpan is really all about hardware-based security for mobile devices. Our core solution is based on a micro SD card that has a 32-bit ARM processor. We do all of our encryption, our key management, our authentication inside hardware, and we've sort of put a stake in the ground as a company that hardware is less vulnerable to attack than software alone.
And this is an approach that some people like, some people don't like. We're going to get more into the details of this whole approach of hardware-based security. And I think whether it's hardware, software-based, or system-type security, I think everyone has to be open-minded to new ways to skin the cat because the number of changes and the evolution. I mean, I just picked up an article this morning. The New York Times was hacked in the last 3 days. Have you read that?
I did. In fact, hacking is probably a bigger problem. Let me back up and say hacking may not be the right term, but these types of malicious acts are a bigger problem than most people realize. Yesterday, I read where they've just found a new Facebook malicious app that specifically targets people who use Zynga Poker, and they'll find a way to socially engineer getting this app on your mobile device, and then they will scrape your credentials and then look into the accounts that have credit cards associated with Zynga Poker. And people, will assign a credit card to buy chips and tokens and things to pay real cash for virtual commodities. But then the criminals will take that credit card information and any other information they can get that's of value, and then turn it into hard money.
Now, with this proliferation of smartphones and mobile devices, you know, if I'm sitting at my desk and a guy named Glenn sends me an email and says, I'm from Nigeria, meet me in London with cash, I'm going to say, oh, this is a jerk, and bang, delete it. Now, if I'm on a cell phone and I'm in a restaurant and waiting for someone and I get some quick message and it's from my wife and she said, click on this, this is a funny link, I'm probably going to click on it and try to see some kind of a funny little guy dancing on YouTube or something. But her email can get spoofed very easily. But I don't have my guard is down in a mobile situation. Have you found that to be the case too?
Absolutely. Mobile devices, just in general, the way we interact with them, we tend to trust them. They're more personal. You know, laptops and desktop computers evolved over a long period of time. We accept now that we must have a firewall on our laptop or desktop. We put antivirus and anti-malware. I was at a medical conference for software developers a few weeks ago, and I asked the audience, you know, how many of you today have mobile application or mobile, like a firewall on your mobile device? And with a room of 150 people, there were only two who raised their hands. And that, to me, shows that, you know, we don't think about the mobile devices in terms of the risk that they present. Another concern is with mobile devices, they are turned on and connected to the network 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for most people. Most people don't turn them off when they get home. Your laptop, you open it up, you work on it, you close it, you put it in its bag, or even your home computer, it'll, you know, power down, shut down. Those devices are protected by many layers, whereas your mobile device is sort of out there on the cutting edge and exposed.
It's interesting. The Symantec wrote up a little blog entry on the incident at the New York Times, and they said firewalls and antivirus is just the start. And with a lot of mobile people, they don't even consider. So they're behind the game as far as firewalls for mobile devices and encrypting your devices, having a password on a mobile device. Let's talk more about CoolSpan. So we know there are all kinds of software-based firewalls out there and best practices. So what's the approach that CoolSpan take? CoolSpan says, you know, passwords not good enough, secure apps not good enough. Let's use a small chip and a phone in order to secure it. Is that the approach CoolSpan brings?
That is the approach that CoolSpan brings, and you bring up an interesting point about what's appropriate. And, you know, you don't use one tool for every task. And so there might be some areas where this isn't the right solution. But if you look across the federal government and commercial enterprises, financial services, banking, healthcare, this does make a lot of sense. The trust chip is FIPS 140-2 validated, which, of course, is a critical check-the-box exercise for our federal customers. But it also translates into success on the commercial side as well. And it works with our Trust Call application, which allows us to provide encrypted voice over IP for mobile devices, and our Trust Text application, which offers encrypted SMS text messaging. And the Trust Chip itself, we develop applications around that using a software development kit that we make available to large integrators who do work with the federal government and partners, so they can build secure applications based on this hardware component very quickly and easily.
You know, I have a spreadsheet for all my username and passwords. I have 80 different usernames and passwords, and I know best practice is to change that every 90 days. But at what point in time do you throw your hands up and say, well, I can have the most complex password in the world, I can change it every 90 days, but still they're going to be able to break that pretty easily? It's just there's a limitation to passwords, isn't there?
There is a limitation to passwords. And so one of the things that we're going to be introducing later this year, and we're not the only ones in this game, obviously, is the ability to do PKI based on the micro SD card. And so, you know, if you have a smart card as a form of identity, whether you're a federal employee or whether you're a commercial employee, and that's what your employer gives you, you'll be able to put those same certificates and credentials on the micro SD card and then have the ability to authenticate from your mobile device for secure messaging, secure email, digital signatures. Again, trying to get away from the passwords entirely. I read where, you know, Google is taking steps to move away and do away with passwords. When I was at Microsoft, we had actually started to move away from passwords where you were using your smart card for all of your access to the building, to your laptop, to the network, and corporate resources. So I see that, you know, that's a definite trend that we're seeing as we move forward.
You know, I've done many radio shows on passwords, and people have written books on passwords, and here's the tricks, and don't write it down, and this and anything. But humans are humans. And I would like to say that I have complex long passwords for all my accounts, but I don't. I have some duplicate passwords, and it's really a problem. I think this is a transition. So in fact, Google is trying to declare war on passwords, aren't they? That's the phrase. Google declares war on passwords.
One of my friends who works in security also said that the best definition of a complex password is one that's too difficult to remember.
Yeah, I think that's a nice definition. I think that one that works. There's all kinds of games you can play with your birth date and social security number and everything else. Oh, there, I just gave it away. People are going to be hacking into my account now. Well, maybe not. So what your organization offers to the federal community and to the commercial community is a secure way to use mobile devices in an environment like medical environment or a secure environment. Or I'm sure there's a lot of larger organizations that are interested in security too, because they're being attacked by hackers all the time. New York Times, who thought of it, huh?
Absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break, and we come back, talk more about security with mobile devices and some technology from CoolSpan that may alleviate some of the problems that you have, and just trying to approach it and try to figure out what's the best for your particular organization. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio is Glenn Schoonover, Senior Director for Security Solutions at a company called CoolSpan. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Glenn Schoonover. He's the Senior Director for Security Solutions at CoolSpan, K-O-O-L-S-P-A-N, CoolSpan, a local company, and it works in mobile security. It's kind of an interesting approach, a hardware-based solution to mobile security. And if you go to the website, CoolSpan, you get blogs, you get white papers, and you see this little thing with a little circle on a registered trademark for Trust Chip. So what the heck's a Trust Chip, and why should my listeners care about a Trust Chip?
The Trust Chip is a micro SD card that allows on-device FIPS 140-2 validated encryption for key storage management and authentication. You know, it currently works with our Trust Call and our Trust Text applications, and third-party system integrators use this to build secure applications for both federal and commercial customers. This particular approach is important to federal employees because it will enable them to comply with things like NIST's recently released Special Publication 800-164, which it's in draft form, but it outlines a requirement for a hardware root of trust in mobile devices. Another key aspect of the Trust Chip is that it is both device and carrier agnostic. So you can use the same Trust Chip in an iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android device, whether it's on AT&T, Verizon, or any of the other carriers.
And all you have to do is turn your computer, and BlackBerry's got a new device, Apple's got a new device, Android. It's just, how do you keep up? So one way is with a hardware solution.
Absolutely. In this particular approach, then there's no loss of value. If you're a federal agency and you have BlackBerries today and you adopt a solution like this, you put the Trust Chip in it, you take advantage of the hardware-based security, and then if you move to a bring-your-own-device policy or you adopt an entirely new platform for your organization, you can take that Trust Chip out, put it in the new device, reinstall the applications, and then there's no loss of investment, and you have continuity.
I have a friend who's a retired D.C. firefighter, and he had quite an exciting life for many years. And I'm thinking about those first responders up at Newton. So someone in this environment walks into a situation, tragedy, you get out your phone. I mean, wouldn't it be a lot more comfortable to have a hardware-based security rather than have to worry about passwords? Or, I mean, you're in a difficult situation. I mean, a lot of the basic precautions are thrown away in order to save someone's life. And using a phone, a mobile device, or something for information, I would think that it would be easier for me to rely on someone hardware-based than a password or something like that.
Ease of use was part of the design when we put this together several years ago. Another consideration is, most people think that GSM phone calls are encrypted, and while GSM is part of the protocol, I mean, encryption is part of the protocol, and they might be encrypted. Some carriers implement the encryption, other carriers do not implement the encryption. So you really have no way of knowing whether your phone call is protected. So if you're talking, whether it's a first responder or a government official who might be talking about sensitive but unclassified information, you know, if somebody wants to listen to what you're saying, there are several easy ways to do that.
In December, my wife and I upgraded our phones. She got the new Apple, and I got an Android, and it's just dawned on me. Those are two complete different operating systems and different versions of operating systems, whether it's ice cream sandwich, whatever silly operating system I have. And she has, of course, the world-famous Apple operating system. But, I mean, if security is software-based, they have to flex with the new operating system, don't they? Well, if it's hardware-based, I mean, who cares if it's an Apple or an Android or even one of the new BlackBerries are going to come out? It's just, it fits.
It does. Now, our developers do have to stay up to date on the current state of the operating systems, because occasionally when Google releases a newer version of Android, they might make changes that could have an impact on our applications. Now, the same thing with Apple, you know, iOS, they do make changes from one release to the next, and we have to stay ahead of that. But by and large, basing the solution on hardware gives you levels of security, because the keys that are in this micro SD card are also encrypted. So you can't just use a file explorer or a browser to look on the chip and see those keys. With a software-based solution, if I get physical access to your device, breaking through the PIN that you may have set up is fairly trivial, regardless of the OS. And this, you know, there's no single solution there. But if you have a 4-digit PIN or a 6-digit PIN, there are ways to break through that. If I have physical access to your device, once I get through your PIN, then it's fairly easy to extract software-generated keys off the device and then use them to decrypt anything that you may have on the phone.
And for 97% of listeners who don't know how to do that, but the 3% of listeners who do that, that's resonating, isn't it? It's, oh, yeah, I can do that.
Absolutely.
Not even a challenge. It's like, oh, this is child's play.
When I mention that, you know, in public forums and conferences, you can see the heads nod.
Yeah, because the 3% are going, yeah, my hobby is doing stuff like that. The FCC has a smartphone checker. Would it behoove my listeners to take advantage of the little, I think it's a little utility that runs and checks your phone? Is it just worthless, or is it of value to my listeners at all?
No, I think it's value to most people, and they have different checklists based on whether it's an Apple or an Android or a BlackBerry or even a Windows phone. And to do sort of a foundational check to say, you know, how do I compare, you know, with respect to best practices? Am I doing the right things? And it's certainly a good place to start.
My company's called Armature, and we do software development for all kinds of folks. We're doing a project in Australia. And so we're going to have two team members take the big plane to Australia and come back. And an interesting blog on Coolspan is it talks about when in China, here's the checklist, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, never leave a mobile device unattended. Wow. I mean, that's some serious advice there, isn't it?
It is. And this kind of goes back to the GSM protocol that I talked about earlier. There are features that are built into the GSM protocol that allow the carrier to do things remotely on your device without your knowledge or permission. Now, this was built in as a way to do troubleshooting and management and push out updates over the air, but they can also be used maliciously. So if somebody wants to turn the microphone on your phone without the phone being used in a call, they can do that remotely. If they want to actually completely replace your operating system with a version of their operating system that they can manage and manipulate remotely, they can do that. I have a friend who traveled to China. He's a security professional. And as an example or an experiment, he got an Android phone. He went to a popular website and downloaded a ROM, put the ROM on there so he knew the version of the operating system. He knew the version of the radio stack. He had everything very, very clearly documented. And he left his phone on. He kept it with him. He didn't just leave it laying around.
Honeypot there, huh?
It was in his pocket or physically with him the entire time. And within 24 hours, the entire OS and radio stack had been replaced with something else.
And the listener should know that turning off the phone ain't good enough.
No, because the phone has to maintain a keep alive signal to the towers, so the towers know where it is and can route calls to you. So even if you turn it off, or you know, it goes into hibernation or sleep mode or whatever you want to call it, it still has some sort of a minimal power signal. And so if you're really want to be prudent, the only thing you can do is to take the battery out of the device to make sure that it's absolutely not live.
You know, Andy Grove years ago was famous for saying, only the paranoid survive. I guess this applies for people with mobile devices traveling today.
Absolutely.
Are there any other countries? What about our guys going to Australia? Should they be worried, or is that a safe place?
When you're outside of the United States, I typically say all bets are off. You simply don't know, and I don't know the nature of that project. But you know, we have we work with companies that engage in billion-dollar mergers and acquisitions all around the world, and it's easy to pick on China. But if somebody wanted to find out, you know, the nature of your sensitive business information or a government discussion that was going on, it would be very straightforward and easy for someone with the right skills to manipulate your phone remotely and to intercept anything you had to say.
So if one of my listeners works for a financial organization, it could be the FDIC, it could be a bank in New York, best practice might be, if you're going outside the United States, get a temporary device, a disposable device, and throw it away when you're done.
Absolutely. And then also to take those additional steps so it can't be used to eavesdrop on you while you're in that country.
Over at the Department of Veteran Affairs, they have a very strict policy about encrypting hard drives on notebook computers. And I don't see much in the Washington Post about the VA losing stuff or data being released. Is that a good policy, too, encrypting everything in a hard drive? Is that good best practice?
It is, but if you recall, they adopted that policy after they lost a hard drive that exposed potentially 500,000 veterans' personal information. And unfortunately, a lot of organizations, not just the federal government, have to experience some sort of pain before they take those additional steps. But if all of the current modern operating systems, whether it's Windows or the Mac OS, even open source, give you the ability to encrypt the hard drives, to encrypt files and folders. And if there's any type of financial information, medical information that might be protected by HIPAA, or sensitive but unclassified information or personally identifiable information, you should consider taking those extra steps to encrypt the drive.
Take a quick break. Back, talk more about mobile security with CoolSpan. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Glenn Schoonover, Senior Director for Security Solutions at CoolSpan. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Glenn Schoonover, Senior Director for Security Solutions at CoolSpan. We're talking about mobile security, and instead of a software solution, we're talking about a hardware solution for mobile security, and works in many different types of devices. And a lot of my listeners are interested in mobile devices, mobile security. Some of them follow bloggers and read blogs, and I'll be blogging about this interview. If you want to find my blog, you go to Google and type in John Gilroy blog, and you stumble on my blog somehow or other. Do you have a blog, Glenn, or which ones do you read?
I do have a blog, and you can find that at www.coolspan.com/blog. But I also am a big fan of Brian Krebs, who many of your listeners will know from the Washington Post. KrebsOnSecurity.com. He writes in a very clear and non-technical way that I think it's easy to understand. And he explains what the threats are, what the impact can be, and how to avoid exposure, and then how to mitigate, you know, in the event that you have a problem. And that I think has a great appeal.
Now, the Washington Post used to have some great writers, Rob Pegoraro and Brian, and they just had late 90s, early 2000s, they had really, really top-notch writers there, and I thought it was just a great publication to read. Now, everything changes over the years, and that's all I'll say about that. Going down the street from 15th Street to 14th Street to White House, they have an initiative where they want every agency to have two mobile apps by May of 2013. I know CIOs in the federal government, that's a surprise to them. Is this good news or bad news for my listeners?
Well, I think, you know, there are several potential issues. First, you know, you have to ask, given limited resources, who's going to write these apps? You know, are they going to outsource this? Will they be experienced in developing apps? Because app development for mobile devices is a sort of a special subset of development in general. Just because you can write Java or C code does not make you a great app writer necessarily. And then there are a lot of, you know, security questions. Is somebody going to be given this responsibility as an additional duty with no training in how to write a secure app? So the apps themselves, you know, if they're not written properly, could inadvertently expose citizen data. Another concern is that, you know, this has the potential then to give criminals another vector of attack. So, you know, they could start to crank out apps that look like a legitimate government application. And then, again, through social engineering and other means, put this on your device or give you an opportunity to download the latest application from your favorite federal agency. So there will need to be a way to clearly distinguish an official agency app from something that might have a malicious payload, perhaps a government app store or an area within the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store dedicated to official government apps. I know that in the Defense Department, DISA is in the process of setting up a dedicated app store for defense-specific apps and will rely on their own infrastructure to host it. So the other question is, you know, what incentive do these agencies have to take these steps? This is a recommendation, and they're stating that they require agencies to do this. A couple of years ago, the White House had their 25-point IT implementation plan that required agencies to push two applications into the cloud. But there was, as far as I know, no real enforcement or incentive. So those are some of the things that will have to be taken into consideration.
Hey, I've raised three kids, so I understand something about life cycle, but I don't think people understand that apps have a whole life cycle just in and of themselves. I mean, just because you write an app and here it is, the winter of 2013, everything's great. What about when you're at a Nationals game? Everything could have changed and gone three different ways.
Absolutely. So, you know, not just developing the app, then you have to maintain the app. You have to think about security updates for the app. And if you just look at the struggle that Oracle has with trying to keep Java secure and patched, you can see a large company like Java, dedicated software developers, and they're struggling with trying to fix problems that have been identified in their code. If you translate that to, say, some small federal agency who may already have a small IT staff, a handful of dedicated developers, who meanwhile, this is not a ding on them or anything that they're trying to accomplish. You're going to have to think about the entire life cycle of application development, not just pushing that first app out the door and making it available.
Yeah, and getting all the press and pat yourself on the back and then wind up with troubles down the road. I think that's the Army is coming up with a special app store where they can have apps. The problem I see is that years ago there was this Good Housekeeping seal of approval. And you go to the store and you'd buy Kellogg's cornflakes because it had the Good Housekeeping seal of approval. And I guess you could put a seal of approval on some apps, but that's not to prevent a hacker from coming up with a creative way to have that seal on that. I mean, so there has to be some kind of a controlled app store for different agencies or the federal government.
And that seal of approval would have a lifetime because, again, over time, as new ways to break into applications and insert malicious code, that after a year, that seal of approval may no longer be valid.
There are listeners who are looking at securing mobile devices, and they're scratching their heads. They walk up to a whiteboard, and they put down, apps. Then the next column is HTML5, and the next column might be hardware, and looking at the positives and negatives of each one of those. And we just talked about apps and, life cycle and security issues and problems. Some people say, well, if you just rely on HTML5, that's really the way to go because you can set up a more secure environment by using HTML5. The problem is I don't think HTML5 is completely done and baked and out of the oven. It's in transition right now, isn't it?
It is. They don't have the final specification. And while, writing your applications in HTML5 has the advantage of maintaining the code on a server and putting all these protective barriers around it and not dealing with the challenges of writing an application for a different operating system to run natively, then you still run into the potential problems with cross-site scripting and hijacking and SQL injection if the apps are not written correctly. You mentioned that the specification isn't final. If I write an HTML5 app today, then what happens if the final specification changes something and breaks my code? Then I've got to go back and rewrite that. That's pretty typical in terms of adopting new technology, but it's a concern. One advantage to the HTML5 approach, of course, is the fact that mobile devices are now much more robust. Historically, running a web-based app on a mobile device was a painful experience. Processors were slow. The devices had limited memory. Today, even a baseline device may have a dual-core processor with four quad-core processors, coming out almost weekly. And that does change the dynamic a bit with the end-user experience, but you still have to be concerned about the security of the application. Native apps, obviously, they have the advantage of speed being written specifically for a particular operating system, but then you go back into the question of, insertion of malicious code, reverse engineering, recompiling. And then if you're a small development team, do you have the expertise to build two or three different apps for each platform?
It's a challenge. And if you're listening to this interview and it's 90 degrees outside and you're thinking about the Nationals going to the World Series, you can go to Coolspan with a K, toolspan.com, and go to their blog site, and you can get all kinds of information on HTML5, native mobile apps. And earlier in the show, we talked about traveling in China. There's a whole blog on traveling to China. And in fact, you have a little checklist of print this out and go through this list before you travel over there. Isn't that right in the blog?
Absolutely, it is. There's a lot of information available there, probably more than we'll have time to talk to today. But if you have questions about mobile security, that's certainly a good place to start.
So where should an organization start if one of my listeners is considering two apps and maybe have some coming up in May? What would be a step-by-step approach? How should they approach it?
With building an app, I think, you know, it's like any kind of software development process. First, you want to identify the requirements and who's the target audience. With the federal agency, you have to assume sort of a lowest common denominator, because you can't dictate what type of end device the in this case, citizens will have.
And so even if you could, it's going to change.
Absolutely. With the pace of market and new devices coming out daily, you simply don't have any control over the end target. Unlike building an application for your organization, where you can dictate and say every employee will have this device, or establish a bring your own device policy, you can't do that if you're developing an app for the public. So there are a lot of challenges there.
BYOD, bring your own device. Some people call it bring your own disaster. BYOA, bring your own app. We're going to take a quick break. We come back, we'll talk more about mobile security, mobile devices, talk about maybe social media and who to follow and what to follow, and how to keep up with this, this dynamic environment where new operating system, new devices coming in every day. And I think many of my listeners that sit back and say, well, I've got a reduced budget, I got reduced staff. What is the most efficient way for me to control these mobile devices that I'm becoming inundated with? You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's guest is Glenn Schoonover, Senior Director for Security Solutions at Coolspan. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Glenn Schoonover, Senior Director for Security Solutions at Coolspan. That's with a K, K-O-O-L-S-P-A-N, the company that works with securing mobile devices by using hardware. And we spent the last 30 or 40 minutes talking about different products that Coolspan has and security challenges for the federal government and apps and HTML5. You know, a lot of my listeners listen to this interview like 6 or 7 months after it airs, and sometimes they follow Twitter folks, and I think Brian Krebs is pretty popular in the Twitter world. Do you have a Twitter handle, or who do you follow? Who do you usually follow?
I do have a Twitter handle. My personal handle is Glenn, S-C-H. But I also have a handle called Life in the Cloud, and that's L-I-F-E-N-T-H-E-C-L-O-U-D, where I really talk about the challenges associated with adopting cloud computing. And in fact, when I set this up a couple of years ago, I made an effort to move everything I worked with, documents, presentations, pictures, music, to the cloud, and to try the different flavors of cloud environments, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, to see, how practical is this? Customers were asking us, we're being encouraged to move to clouds to take advantage of economies of scale and centralized security and management. And I felt the only way I could give them an honest answer was to do it myself and experience both the pain and the progress. I also use tools like Dropbox and SugarSync, which allows me to synchronize information across multiple platforms, whether I'm on an Apple MacBook or a Windows machine, or even my mobile phone's Android, iPhone, and Windows phone. There are clients there that allow me to get to my documents regardless of where I am.
My Twitter handle is at Ray Gilray, and I think Coolspan has one too, at Coolspan1, I think.
At Coolspan1.
So you can follow those and see what's going on. Kind of interesting community in the Twitter world. It's almost like a school of fish. It's so topical, and individual groups follow all kinds of different things. I follow a group of people who are training to swim across Gibraltar, and I follow this group, and I go back and forth. It's kind of a strange world to live here on the internet. Each one of my guests have to survive a 10-point test to find out if you're a card-carrying nerd, Glenn, so you're going to be subjected to this as well. So the first question is, what year did you buy your first computer?
I bought my first computer in 1987. It was an Amiga 500, and I really went upscale. I went for the 1 megabyte RAM expansion.
Whoa. boy, I remember these of 640K machines, 1987. You're your first cell phone?
1991. I had just returned from the first Gulf War, and I invested in a Motorola bag phone.
Bag man with a bag phone.
I was.
And you have a Twitter feed. You want to repeat that? I think GlennSCH. Is that one?
That's right. At GlennSCH and then at Life in the Cloud as well.
Good. And you have your own blog, I assume? You just contribute to the company blog.
I contribute to the company blog.
Okay. We just talked about this, but you use online personal backup services, Dropbox?
I do. I'm a real big fan there for Dropbox, SugarSync. I also use the Amazon Cloud, and then I've got SkyDrive spread across several different machines as well. For my home stuff, I also have if you want to verify my geek card, I built a storage server at home with a little over 4 terabytes of storage that I maintain.
Well, that's having an NAS at home. That surely gets points in the nerd community here. What kind of a smartphone do you have?
Well, given that our company supports mobile devices, I actually have more than one. My personal smartphone is a Windows phone. It's a running Windows Phone 7 right now. I'm still on the fence about, you know, which Windows Phone 8 device I want to upgrade to. But I also have in my pocket an Android phone and an iPhone.
Boy, you're getting all kinds of points in the mobile area. And now, how many apps do you have on all those phones? Got to be hundreds.
Well, that's just it. I've never really counted. In fact, I was surprised. Do people actually keep track of this?
I've never really counted. Well, that's good to know. And finally, what kind of a tablet device do you have?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Kindle HD Fire. Got one a year ago for my son as a Christmas present. I really liked it. When they came out with the larger 8.9-inch device, I got that for Christmas. Although I did have prior to that an HTC Flyer that runs Android. I bought it through Expansys, which allows you to get unlocked devices. And I bought it so that I could get the European version. The one that they were selling here in the United States did not have a 3G radio. So you were tethered to Wi-Fi exclusively. But by buying the overseas version, I could put my own SIM in it and then get access to data on the go.
What social networking sites do you participate in?
Well, very active in both Facebook and LinkedIn. And I use the Seismic desktop client to aggregate all of my feeds into one place. It makes it much easier to follow and then to tweet and retweet and then and sort of cross-level different things of interest.
And it's called Seismic?
Seismic, S-E-E-S-M-I-C.
I've never heard of that one. Mm-hmm. Seismic. And finally, the last book you read was electronic or paper?
It was electronic. It was called The Pursuit of God by A.W. Tozer, a 19th century theologian.
Well, interesting that, you were doing real well until you got the theology there. It should have been more on, you know, coding with Objective-C.
I have read plenty of those books.
The bad ones, yeah. 19th century philosophy, that's kind of interesting. Well, I'll have to take the results and put them through my UNIVAC computer and print out something on my green bar printer downstairs and mail it to you, so kind of interesting. We've talked about all kinds of topics here, mobile security, apps, HTML5, the move in May for agencies to have mobile sites and everything else. I guess, you know, it's hard to predict what's going to happen, and I touched on it earlier. A lot of my listeners are getting their budgets cut back. Well, what does this whole cutback thing mean for my listeners for federal security?
Well, very often when federal budgets are cut or budgets anywhere are cut, one of the first things to go is training. And so I can anticipate that if they have not already had to suffer reduced training, that they're going to be finding that the case going forward. Again, and it's absolutely essential to being able to do their job that employees, regardless of where they work, are properly trained on the new tools as they become available. New security tools are coming out all the time, things that will make their jobs, make them more efficient in their jobs, make the federal networks more secure. But if the employees aren't trained on those tools, then they won't be implemented properly. And just a quick example, when I was at the Pentagon, we did security for all of the services, Army, Air Force, Navy, OSD. And I remember some folks from the Navy side coming back to us and saying, "You guys don't have to monitor our networks. We just installed a firewall." But they weren't trained on it. And this isn't a ding. It was just, you know, the dynamic of the time. And so one of my senior security guys took a look at their firewall and discovered that it hadn't been patched. It wasn't configured properly. And so that's the risk they take. You know, if you don't have training on the tools and you don't have to know how to implement the tools that you have, it would be very, very difficult and potentially put those agencies at risk.
Earlier in the show, I talked about 700 million smartphones were sold last year. I don't know how many million will be sold this year, and what's the next smartphone going to look like? No one really knows. It's kind of difficult to gaze in the future and talk about mobile security with this uncertain future, but there's got to be some guidelines or principles that my listeners can learn from you.
Well, I think that if you were to pull out your crystal ball there, you're going to see more and more devices with built-in security based on hardware. I mentioned earlier that NIST has developed a special publication, 800-124. It's in draft, and it specifies a requirement for hardware-rooted security on mobile devices. Windows Phone 8 has built-in encryption for the device and a secure boot process to make it less likely that malicious code can be running on the phone. Likewise, Samsung has their Safe framework it's a security framework for enterprise that allows their devices to be managed more easily by mobile device management. You know, laptops and desktop computers, over 30 years of evolution, you know, we take for granted that they're going to have a firewall in the operating system or that server that's behind multiple layers of what we used to call defense in depth, routers, access control lists. Mobile devices have nothing even remotely close to that today. And I think that's we're going to start seeing where out of the box, you're going to have to either have it pre-installed or put firewalls and mobile device management on the device. To that end, you know, when people talk about bring your own device in the corporate environment or the federal enterprise, bring your own device is usually accompanied by a mobile device management solution, something that allows that enterprise to control what applications can be installed on those devices. Something that people don't think about, though, is, so what about your personal devices? What about those phones that your husband or your wife or your children are carrying around? How are they managed? What happens if they get lost? And I've actually found, I started thinking about that in my own case. I've got several corporate devices. They're managed appropriately, but I also have children and, you know, they have phones. And what about them? And I've found there is one company called Mobile Device Management, and they have an application called 3CX, and it is a personal MDM that you can put on your phone, and it allows you to track location and wipe the devices remotely to limit what applications you can whitelist, you can blacklist. And I found that to be very useful. So, you know, going forward, you're going to see more hardware security baked in, not added on after the fact, and the need to manage these devices.
It's always reassuring when I heard about the Windows 8 phone is that what happens is when you turn it on, it checks to see if anything's been changed. And so, well, isn't that interesting? Talk about people in China and changing things. With this type of system, they'd realize that something's changed and may not pursue with a regular boot up process. We're going to have to end our interview today, maybe come back in 6 months, 8 months, and see what's changed. Maybe in the world of BlackBerry, maybe it'll come back from the ashes and be the popular system on Capitol Hill once again. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio is my guest, Glenn Schoonover, Senior Director for Security at a company called Coolspan, K-O-O-L-S-P-A-N.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.